A quick note before we get started. We've started a Facebook group for the podcast. Just search for The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly Podcast on, well, Facebook. The link will also be in the show notes. Thanks. Hello and welcome back to The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly. It's a karaoke podcast. I don't know if you knew that. It's a karaoke podcast that is the direct result of When Boredom Meets Fandom. I don't have anything to go here today, host Adam Wainwright.
Thank God, because I never do. I'm Ed Kennard.
Yeah, Ed, you never, like, this is I think the listeners have earned this little insight into the process right now. You know, I feel like sometimes we're like the people that are in the kitchen. Like, you don't know what's happening back there, but you're just hoping the food is delicious. And you're ignoring anything that could potentially be going on back in the kitchen as long as the food is delicious. So here's a little insight into this. I don't tell Ed what I'm going to say there. So he has to react on the fly every time we record this opening. And he never has anything to go there, guys.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, I'm the one who builds all the talk tracks and files and all of the data for the episodes, because I am very much apparently a Virgo, and I like planning, and I like rigidness, and I like discipline. And Adam is a
large
overgrown man child.
That's a Gemini. Yeah, that's about right.
I watched you play with a 2-year-old this weekend, and I was like, wow, Adam has finally found someone to hang out with that's on a comparable maturity level.
We did, actually. It really is like a comparative maturity level. We played a game where we were standing by a river safely. Of course, there's a large fence there, but there was this patch of grass in front of us, and this 2-year-old fell over, like onto the grass, and looked up at me like expecting me to fall over with him. So naturally I fell over into the grass, and it turned into a game for like the next 10 minutes where he would stand, fall into the grass, and then I would stand and fall into the grass with him. It was a beautiful rhythm of a game.
It was adorable. And I mean, I don't even like kids. I mean, I like that one because it's Corey's kid, but like in general, in principle, the existence of children is not a thing that appeals to me or amuses me.
My appeal for children has evolved over the years. I've always had a soft spot. You know, one day I do look forward to, you know, if things go well, like having one of my own.
But I look forward to being a bad influence to it.
Yeah, that's what I fully anticipate. And like, I have fun with the little 2-year-old, but I'm definitely the uncle that's definitely going to be a bad influence, that the mom looks at me and it's like, what did you teach him now? I'm like, don't worry about it. You'll know in about 30 seconds when he starts repeating exactly what I said. But it was great to see you. We actually had a chance to see each other. I was in Western Pennsylvania this weekend, just kind of hanging out, celebrating my engagement. And we were in there for, you know, celebrating another baby that's being born with a friend of mine. And we had a gathering on Friday night that we invited a bunch of people down and was amongst them. And we objectively drank a lot that night,
which is, you know, par for the course.
It is par for the course. It was a great night that we had a ton of fun. I was a little hungover the next morning, and this is partially because of Corey and Ryan. We chugged a lot of beers when people weren't looking.
That also sounds par for the course. So I don't, yeah. There's no surprise there.
Guys, don't do it. I don't know how we settled into this thing where we make bets, and the result of our bet is if you lose, you have to chug a beer. We have a system at this point. We have a spreadsheet made. We, on our Facebook conversation, we change our nicknames based on the amount of chugs that we owe and pay them back. Now, it used to be extreme. A couple of years ago, it was extreme where we'd have to like do them on the spot and like do them immediately, no matter how many were there. And like, it led to, I think there was a Steelers game where Corey and I chugged 8 beers. And that's when we said, maybe that's too much. Maybe we need to start coming up with the rules and being able to like stagger this and like cap it when we're making these bets and stuff like that.
Man, I mean, imagine how much better things would have went 10 years ago if rules like that had been in place.
Yes. Where are you going with this, Ed?
Oh, I'm just thinking back to the times when we all would go to the bar together. You, me, Corey, a whole bunch of other people.
Oh.
And make bad choices.
Yeah, if we had rules in place that prevented bad choices,
we'd have fewer scars.
We'd all have fewer scars. Each and every one of us to a T would definitely have fewer scars. But hey, you know what, Ed? You know what I just remembered?
No, what, Adam?
This is a karaoke podcast. Oh, yes. We haven't talked about karaoke at all since we got started. We've been talking for 5 minutes and people have just been listening to us ramble on about our boring but still enriching lives in some ways. But this is a karaoke podcast. I feel like we should discuss karaoke things if you're on board with that.
Yeah, I would be down with that. Yeah.
What do you think we should talk about this weekend?
Well, I mean, thinking about the past, I think we naturally have to think about the past. I'm feeling a little nostalgic, Adam.
You're feeling nostalgic, Ed. Nostalgic for what era? Please tell me.
I am feeling nostalgic for the late 90s, early 2000s. Actually, I'm feeling nostalgic all the way to 2010.
To 2010, which is like, say, from like the 90s to 2010. Is that about the area you're looking for?
That is the area I'm looking for, Adam.
Ah, great, Ed. How about we talk about that this week, if it's okay with you?
It's fine by me.
Okay. I think our guests later would appreciate it if we talked about this specific era too.
Yeah, so everything had some kind of thematic unity.
Yeah, and like, listen to me. I'm a guy who loves some thematic unity. You know what I'm saying? Like, Avatar, come on.
Which Avatar?
The blue one.
The blue aliens who have sex with their ponytails.
Yeah, the sex with the ponytails one, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Thematic unity. Come on, Avatar. What's wrong with you? That's the best. No, that's not the best example I can come up with. Okay, let's talk about karaoke a little bit. Yeah, the 90s and the 2000s. I mean, we both got our start in the... I got my start probably right around 2005, 2006. So it's a little bit outside. It's kind of at the very tail end of the era that we're looking for. Because, you know, like I got my start first. My earliest karaoke memory is singing karaoke with AmeriCorps. That would have been about 2006. Ed, when did you have your karaoke start? It had to fall somewhere in this range. You're not that old.
Technically, my first karaoke experience was actually in the mid-90s. I lived at and worked at a resort growing up. So even though I was well underage, I was able to get into the hotel bar and there was karaoke. And it's a story for another time also. I really need my little brother on for that episode. Because
yeah, I'm looking forward to when you get your little brother to actually agree to like come but, and talk to us.
Also, I mean, mid-2000s probably too, going out with my nerd friends in New York. Every time there was like a comic show or a thing at our friend's comic book store, we'd often end up at a karaoke bar somewhere after all the nerd festivities of the day. There probably is somewhere down the line an episode about nerds and karaoke going together, because they really kind of seem to. I mean, there's nerddom intersects with things, karaoke, kink communities, queer identities. Like there's so much stuff that nerdness infects.
Infects. That's a great choice of words, Ed. So we both kind of got, like, we both had different experiences and kind of settled in during this decade. What do you think, like, what are you nostalgic? Are you nostalgic for anything from when you got started, Ed? Is there a specific memory, a specific feeling that you had about karaoke back in those days that's a little bit different than what you get now? Well, just talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing that I really miss, and I'm somebody who kind of always has to amp things up to the next level, is I miss being nervous. I don't get that anymore. It takes a lot to get that adrenaline rush from going out and doing this. I mean, people who have just started doing karaoke, like thinking back to our episode with Jess, who you know was just starting her karaoke journey, there is often an element of fear or trepidation when you first start doing something. I genuinely miss that feeling. I miss the karaoke butterflies that I would get. I mean, I've had to amp that up in multiple ways. I started going to live band karaoke, started to pick my songs out of a hat, started to sing songs I've never even heard before, just to kind of try to get some of that stuff back. Now, one thing I think about, though, when I think about when you and I like really started doing it, is if you think back on it, a lot of the songs that we did would have been songs from that time period, from the 90s, the 2000s. It's almost like a core syllabus of karaoke. And one of my theories on karaoke is that by and large, the songs that you bring to the table, aside from the stuff that becomes a standard for karaoke and a standard for you, a lot of our musical tastes really devolve back to that period of time when we were in middle school, high school, and undergrad.
I agree with you to a certain extent. I think just your music, I agree with you that your musical history is what you bring to the table with karaoke. I'm gonna vary a little bit with high school, because I'm pretty sure you've never heard me sing the majority of bands that I listened to in high school. And because the bands that I listened to in high school were Korn, Limp Bizkit, Kid Rock. You may have heard me sing Kid Rock before.
I've certainly heard you do Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit.
You've heard me sing Limp Bizkit? What Limp Bizkit song have you heard me sing? Was it the Nookie?
I think it was that one. I think I have.
Was it Rolling, 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 Rolling?
I can't say that I'm not.
Was it Faith? Were you mad at me because I chose Limp Bizkit's version of Faith and not George Michael's?
I'm sorry that I'm not intimately familiar with Limp Bizkit's oeuvre.
And can we agree though on one thing? The sign of aging and growing up in your musical taste is the day that you finally move away from Limp Bizkit's Faith and realize that George Michael's Faith is a much better song.
That's definitely a milestone. I mean, I remember the absolute kick in the pants for me was driving around somewhere in the early 2010s and hearing the song that was number one the day I was born airing on an oldies station.
Ooh, that would have happened to me. I don't know what number one the year I was born was. The day I was born. There has to be a quick way to look this up.
While Adam's looking that up, I will tell you that mine is My Sharona by The Knack.
Ooh, My Sharona.
A creepy song if you really think about it.
Oh, man, I have a great number one song on the day that I was born. Hell yeah. This is called winning right here, guys. My Sharona is not the best. Eddie, you ready for this?
Yes.
Number one on the day that I was born, on May 26, 1984. Yes, you guys can know that. It's not hidden. It's there on Facebook. And if you share it on Facebook, you share it with the world. So on May 26, 1984, the number one song was Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams.
It's a fantastic song.
It's so good. It's Let's Hear It for the Boy. That was not a good version of the song, but it's a good song, y'all. Man, that's really exciting to me now. Okay, now I know, and that's an interesting fact about me that I will share at those stupid group meetings where you have to share one interesting fact about yourself. I'm going to start busting that out. I'm like, oh yeah, the song on the day I was born was Let's Hear It for the Boy by Denise Williams. I was preordained to be awesome. Like, it might as well have been about me. Was it not about me yet?
I mean, sure. I'm certainly
happier. There it is.
I'm certainly happier that you're in the world.
So that's, oh, thank you, Ed.
I mean, that's how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I got it. No, I'm tracking. But you're right. I think it's more you bring your musical taste. So, because I did grow up, like when I still remember, I don't remember a lot when I was a really young child, but I do remember falling asleep with a nightlight. It had like a quarter moon with a little mouse hanging on. It was the nightlight, and it had an AM FM radio attached to it. And we listened to my mom would put on the oldie station as I fell asleep. So I would fall asleep listening to, you know, Billy Joel and Elton John and Bruce Springsteen was what they were playing on these stations. So I kind of grew up with that music, the Beatles, and that's stuff I initially, when I started getting into karaoke, what I would do Billy Joel. That was my big entry into karaoke. I could do We Didn't Start the Fire right off the bat. I knew all of Billy Joel's catalog. I'm like, I can't be that difficult to sing. And I realized, oh, nope, never mind. There's some really difficult Billy Joel songs to sing. So I'm with you. Yeah, you kind of bring what you bring to the table, and we have a very unique era that we grew up in. Based on your musical experience when Ed was a young teenage lad.
I really thought you were going to go with Lion King and say that I was a young warthog.
Yes, when you were a young warthog. Go ahead.
And
yes.
I was a young warthog.
That's why people should listen to this podcast. That's going to go in a highlight reel if we ever make one of those. That right there. And that should just be our stinger from now on, too. But when you were a young warthog, Ed, what was your musical taste? What do you think you brought to, like, when you start getting into karaoke? What did you bring to the table from the 90s, 2000s that were kind of your entryway drug?
Well, from like you, I grew up with music that wasn't of my time also. I mean, and mine goes way back. My grandmother was in the music industry in the 30s and 40s. So that's kind of where, like, I come by my American Songbook, Tin Pan Alley. I come by that honestly. I brought something to you and when we met. You basically didn't know any hip hop earlier than 1991. And that's music that I grew up with in the 80s. And then I was a high schooler in the 90s. So I had a lot of grunge and alternative too.
You did. I was going to say what you brought to me as far as hip hop goes is I knew all the hype back in the late 90s, early 2000s. I knew all the hip hop that white people were supposed to know is the easiest way to put it. It's like, I knew who Eminem and Jay-Z were. Biggie and Tupac had a fight sometime. And that's what a white kid growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, like, and like where I grew up, that's what we knew about hip hop. There was nothing else beyond that. And it took me, started a train that led me well beyond that. And I'm very thankful for that. Thank you, Ed.
You're quite welcome. I'm glad I finally brought something to the table at some point.
Yeah. No, you brought a big thing to the table when it comes to that. But yeah, these are, so we each brought our own little experiences into when we started karaoke, but let's get into the nitty gritty because what this show is really about should always be about trivia of some sort. I'm not going to call this a challenge, but you know, in my infinite wisdom, I did do a little bit of research leading up to the episode and I found one's a top 100 list. The other one's a top 15, but I'm looking at the top eight. the top 8 karaoke songs for the 90s and 2000s.
Now, let me ask a clarifying question. Are these the songs that were sung then or songs from then?
Songs from then.
Okay.
Songs from them. So you could probably find them in a karaoke rotation because new songs always work their ways into the karaoke rotation. And these are all highly recognizable songs from karaoke. Some of them are sung a little bit more than others at karaoke, but they're highly recognizable songs. So we have heard of karaoke. So okay. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the 90s first, and then we're going to go to the 2000s. I'm going to give you 5 guesses.
Okay.
If you can get 3, then you're going to be awarded 170 points.
Oh, okay.
If you can't get 3, you're going to be subtracted 200 points because I'm a dick like that.
That sounds right.
Yep.
That's right. So this one is, and your range is 1990 through 1999 on this?
Yep, that's what I'm going to go with. It's okay. 1990 and 1999. So we're going to go with the 1990s. Ed, hit me with some guesses. I'm going to give you a yes or no.
Fuji's cover of Killing Me Softly.
No.
Crap. I really thought that one was going to be a lock.
Nope.
I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston version.
No.
God damn it.
Now, let me preface too that this is a list that I randomly found on the internet, and there's probably nothing actually behind it. But somebody ranked the best 90s karaoke songs that are still popular today.
No. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, Friends in Low Places.
No.
What? I really thought this was
gonna I will give you
white, I thought this I will, was gonna be some white boy shit.
I'm gonna give you 3 guesses and you want some clues.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much. I will absolutely take the handicap. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Help me.
2 of the top 8 songs are from a trio that was popular in the 90s.
Waterfalls by TLC.
Yep.
And oh, 2 by TLC.
Yep.
What was the other big TLC song that was like super popular with No Scrubs?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Hanging out the passenger side of your best friend's ride trying to holler at me. Yeah, they don't want no scrubs. TLC don't want no scrubs. I don't want no scrubs either.
As long as No Pigeons didn't make that list, we're good.
No Pigeons didn't make that list. You can give me one more, Ed. Think very poppy bands. One's a boy band, but it's not the boy band that you would think from the 90s for some reason. Neither one of the boy bands you would think, but it's a very slow, very popular boy band. The other ones are very, there's a couple very poppy bands involved there.
Is it an early 90s boy band?
No.
Kids on the Block.
No, it's not New Kids on the Block.
All right. So if it's not Backstreet Boys and it's not NSYNC, it's 98 Degrees.
It's not 98 Degrees. What? You're missing a boy band.
I'm missing a boy band.
You are missing a boy band. An incredibly popular boy band that was definitely on like Total Request Live, if you remember those, like that show from MTV back in the day.
Boys to Men a boy band?
No, we're not calling. Well, I mean, you could, but I'm not calling them a boys band, and I've never called them a boys band. So why would I start that now? You're missing a boy band.
I'm missing
a now boy I'm band. Focused on this. I can give you the rest of this list because now I want you to get this. Okay, I'm going to give you the top 7 songs because they are ranked at number 8 on the list that I'm looking at right now, this boy band, okay? Number 1 is the Bare Naked Ladies, 1 Week.
Okay.
Number 2, TLC, Waterfalls. Mm-hmm. Number 3, Aqua's Barbie Girl. Number 4, Smash Mouth's All Star.
Okay.
Number 5, The Spice Girls, Wannabe. Number 6, Christina Aguilera's Genie in a Bottle. Number 7's TLC's No Scrubs, and number 8 is a boy band that you haven't named but were incredibly popular at the time. Would you like one more clue?
Absolutely, but I also want to say that I think this list is garbage.
That's fine. You can think it's garbage. This is the list we're working with, son.
Yeah.
Number 8, they went on to be an indie band. I think after they were a boy band, they transitioned to being an indie band. They recorded an indie album too that was very different from what they put out initially. One of the like this their title of their biggest hit that is on this list makes no sense. It is not an actual word.
It's not an actual word.
No, it's more of a sound.
Oh, Mbop.
Yeah, it's Hanson.
Is Hanson a boy band?
They're a boy band, buddy. They were a boy band when they got started.
I'm gonna quibble.
You can quibble all you want. They were famous for their blonde hair. That's the only reason they got popular because they were handsome. And they had that long blonde hair.
Wasn't like the drummer prepubescent at the time when that song came out? I
boy band.
All right, sure.
How else would you classify them? Are you going to put them in the same category as like the Bare Naked Ladies?
They're fucking Partridges.
Are you going to put them in the same category?
Of the 90s. They're not
the Partridges of the 90s. Get the fuck out of here. Okay, on to the 2000s. Let's go. Oh, you're never going to get one of these. You're never getting number 1. This is so great. I can't believe. Okay, I love this list so much. Can I have 2 of these at the same time? Okay, I have 2 lists of the top 8 at the same time. One is from sofaempire.com that felt like it was necessary to rank the top 15 best 2000 songs. The other one is from karaokekooks.com. Mm-hmm. Which one would you prefer I use? Because I will not use both. So I will let you pick your your demise to a certain extent.
Wow. I'm just very tempted by Karaoke Kooks because it feels like it's on brand for us.
Great. Let's go.
I feel like it's the worst list. Am I correct?
Nope. I think the worst list was the first one. The one number one on the first list is not on this list. Because number one on the list that you didn't choose was Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes. And that is not on the top eight for this other list that I'm looking at. So the 16 best karaoke songs of the 2000s from karaokekooks.com. Ed, hit me with some guesses.
Guesses? Okay, so you're not giving me any hints this time. I just have to like...
We didn't start with hints last time. Do you want everything handed to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's fair.
2000s.
Give me three guesses and then we can start working on some hints.
Okay, first guess is going to be...
I figure we can learn stuff from this because no matter what you're naming, it's still probably a popular thing. So like something we recognize.
I'm blanking on the actual title of Eminem's...
Eminem is not on this list. There's a clue.
Okay, but it was going to be the one from 8 Mile. What's Lose Yourself?
Lose Yourself. It's Lose Yourself. Yep, that's the one from 8 Mile.
Okay.
Is that the 2000s?
Yeah.
2000 to 2009?
I'm pretty sure that movie came out in the 2000s.
No, it did. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I was watching it.
Yep. Okay.
There is one.
Oh, Mr. Brightside, The Killers.
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm not on this list. There is one rap song on this list.
Okay.
There is one country song on this list.
Okay. So the country song is Goodbye Earl.
It's not.
What?
No, it's much bigger than Goodbye Earl.
Is the rap song Gold Digger?
No. The rap song. Okay. Let's start diving in here. Okay. Right. So the rap song is by one of Eminem's proteges.
D12.
No,
I didn't know Eminem had proteges.
He did.
No, I didn't.
There's somebody got famous because of Eminem.
I don't know.
That wasn't in D12. Yes, you do.
I probably do when you say it.
Oh my God.
Give me another one.
The country song is a song that you still hear at karaoke today.
Okay.
Almost consistently at karaoke today, you will hear this country song.
Before He Cheats.
No, it's not a female. It's by a karaoke band.
Chicken Fried.
Yes, that's it right there. Chicken Fried came in on this list. So we have Chicken Fried. That's the country song.
I got one. I feel a little bit.
The hip hop song is unbelievable. You haven't got it.
From Eminem's protege.
You can't even name the artist right now based on those clues. He got shot like 100 fucking times.
Oh God. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. 50 Cent.
Yeah, 50 Cent. No, it's not in the club.
It's not.
Nope. What other one would it be? He's with one of the regulators, if I'm right. It features a regulator. Mallin' Up.
What?
21 questions.
I don't know. That's not, I've never even heard anyone do that at karaoke.
50 Cent featuring Nate Dogg, 21 questions. Part of the eight best karaoke songs of the 2000s on this list that you chose, Ed.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. We need to get you to get at least one of these. Which one do I think you can get? Oh, you can get this one. Oh God. This is tricky. If I say the words, it's not this song, but it's by the artist of the song. If I say the words, fuck you, ooh, 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 who do you think of?
Well, I think it's CeeLo Green.
Yep.
So it's a CeeLo song or is it a Gnarls Barkley song? It's crazy.
It's crazy. There you go. The crazy's on this list. If I say the first American Idol winner, who comes to mind?
Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone.
There you go. Now we're rocking and we're
that
rolling.
Really does line into our interview too, because that song does come up.
Oh, damn.
And actually, let's just address it at this point. I scheduled this interview way in advance, so you're only going to hear me talking to our guest because Adam had to do school things.
Yeah, Adam was doing school things and learning, and he's sad he missed this interview, but we haven't finished this yet. We're going to finish it right now. I can tell you that with this song, it doesn't even matter.
A Metallica.
Nope. I tried so hard. I fought so long. But blank, blank, blank. Oh. It doesn't even matter.
Is that Evanescence?
No, it's not Evanescence.
What? I can hear it in my head.
You clearly can't, because if you said the three words that I blanked out in the like thing, then you could like you would know.
Fall so hard in the end.
You just said it out loud and can't say it as the name of the song.
The song is Fall So Hard.
No. What'd you say after that?
It doesn't even matter.
No,
that's not what
you said. In the end. There we go. Yes. Who's a bye?
This is not my kind of music.
It's Linkin Park. It's Linkin Park.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't gonna move on. That. Yeah.
The other ones is All My Life by the Foo Fighters. Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake and One More Time by Daft Punk. Would you like to know what the rest of this list was? Lady Gaga's Poker Face, White Stripes.
Got that one.
You clearly wouldn't because you didn't guess, Ed. White Stripes, Seven Nation Army, Beyonce's Single Ladies, Amy Winehouse's Valerie, Outkast, Hey Ya, come on, that was everywhere. Ooh, Pussycat Dolls, Don't Ya?
Ooh, that's a good song.
Lady Gaga's Bad Romance, Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Really?
And this rounded out the 16 that were on this list. Yes. So everybody, that's the songs that pop up for the 90s and 2000s. That gives you a little taste of what was popular for karaoke during these times when Ed and I were just getting started, wee lads. But we clearly, based on what you just heard, can't knowledgeably talk about.
No, God, no.
But we, Ed, I think like we were talking about the interview that I missed out on. I think you found the expert there, right?
I did. I mean, this is a guy who not only knew karaoke in the late 90s and in the 2000s, but actually wrote the book on it.
He wrote the book on it? Damn, Ed, we should write the book on the karaoke in our era.
No.
Yeah, you're probably right. And this podcast is enough sometimes. But you found the expert. I'd say we kind of like give our final thoughts here and then pass off. 90s, 2000s karaoke. Like any final thoughts on...
Yeah, my final thoughts is, I mean, you will hear the music from these decades frequently at karaoke. Even now in the 2020s, if you are able to go out and do karaoke, I assume that that's going to happen again at some point. But the real thing, the real music of the 90s and the 2000s is the friends we made along the way. I want to stress that the thing I'm nostalgic for is not the music. It's the people that we knew when we started doing karaoke. And I really think that that's a big part of my nostalgia factor is just the good time spent with good people, okay people, and some shitty people.
The shitty people are, I feel, essential. Yeah, I can get on board with that for the most part. Yeah, I still have very fond memories of singing. One of my earliest memories of karaoke is still singing Cruisin'.
I love it when we're cruising together. From the movie Duets, which, I mean, if you want to see a snapshot of what karaoke might have looked like in the 90s, 1995's Duets is a very good view into that. I highly recommend it.
It is, yeah.
It's also very unhinged.
It's very unhinged. It's great. But that's one of my earliest memories. So, you know, I remember who I sang that with. I remember the atmosphere, the feel of the time, where I was. And yeah, it's something you kind of carry with you. And that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about karaoke in general, not just that time period. So that's it. That's the 90s. That's the 2000s. We're going to shut up now and we're going to let the expert who literally wrote the book on the subject really drop some truth and knowledge bombs on you. So unless you got anything else, Ed?
No, sir. I'm ready to roll with that interview.
All right, let's roll with the interview and cue the fucking guitar already.
If you've read GQ, Spin, Esquire, Wired, or the New York Times, you've probably already read something by our guest, Brian Raftery. And since you're listening to a karaoke podcast on purpose, there's also a chance you've read Don't Stop Believin', How Karaoke Conquered the World and Changed My Life, which he also wrote. But today he's going to dig in deep and help paint a picture of karaoke in rural Pennsylvania and urban New York City in the 90s and 2000s, the places where Adam and I cut our teeth in karaoke a decade later. Thanks for joining us today on The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First question I have for you is, how did you start doing karaoke in the first place? What got you into it?
You know, I was very lucky in that I went to Penn State, so I was in central Pennsylvania in the 90s, and a friend of mine had done karaoke and started talking about it. And at that point in my life, you know, I was in my early 20s, it was the 90s. I'm sure you have some younger people who might be shocked to learn this, but karaoke was not cool in any way. I only really knew of it from, I'd lived in Hawaii when I was a young teenager for about a year, and it was just a thing that my dad and mom apparently did at a party once. I was like, what? You sang at my parents singing to get, what was that? But I had a friend who was like, no, we really got to try it, because we were all just such huge music fans and we just didn't have an outlet for it. I was in a high school cover band playing guitar. I was never particularly good at guitar. I was never good at singing. But like a lot of people, I just connected to music from the earliest age that I can remember. So the idea of like, wait, you can go and sing these songs and just kind of pretend you're whoever I was obsessed with in 1993 or 94, like whichever rock star, whether it was, you know, Billy Corgan or Billy Joel, one of the Billies, one of the many Billies that I've sung terribly over the years. And, you know, we found a karaoke night at Penn State, that one of the bars there was having an open karaoke night. And, you know, I did have to drink quite a bit to get up. I'm not entirely sure what I sang. I may have mentioned the book, but I can't remember now. And it was just such a blast. And it's funny when you mentioned like the karaoke scene in central Pennsylvania. At that point, I don't know if it existed. It may have just been me and my friends playing records loudly in our apartment and singing along. But eventually a bunch of us moved to New York City, and that's when it really took off. I mean, I feel like moving to New York in 1999 was like, if you like karaoke, was like moving to Hollywood in 1946 or something. It's like, it's the boom time. It's like you go down to the village and there were all these great karaoke private room places. And I know listening from the show that you guys are much more into the full sing in front of a bar experience. But for me and my friends, we just moved to New York. When you move to New York, you don't have a big enough place to throw parties. You're looking for your scene, looking for your people. And so we basically found this one karaoke bar, Village Karaoke, and we kind of turned into our private, not our private, our very public, you know, party scene where we would just invite as many people as we could in a room and sing. And that really was, for my social life in my early to mid 20s, for at least 2 years, that was something I did almost every weekend and often many weekday nights.
Yeah, I feel that. The majority of long-term friendships I've built since grad school have come from that same kind of thing. I mean, Adam and I, as I've said to him before, I don't think we'd be friends the way that we are now, you know, had we not dove into this thing together and frequently and repeatedly. So yeah, you were in New York in the early 90s.
Well, I got there in 99.
In the late 90s.
Yeah. I would have liked to have been there. It sounds like it was a fascinating, horrifying time to be late 80s, early 90s New York, as portrayed in popular culture, seemed like a complete hellhole. Yeah. It would have been fascinating to see it.
But you were in New York in the late 90s, early 2000s. Aside from like Village Karaoke, which you say that ended up becoming home base for you and your friend group, what other places? I'm just curious if we've sung in the same bars. Did you do Winnie's ever?
Winnie's a couple of times, though. I think Winnie's was like almost seen as like it could get very crowded. Mm-hmm. And the one thing we liked about Village Karaoke was we eventually became friends with everyone who worked there. So we would call and get bumped in line. We definitely went to a lot. One of our favorite things to do was we would go to Arlene's Grocery, where the punk metal karaoke bands on Monday nights. And that was, gosh, it's so weird that we're talking in September, because September 10th, 2001, I was at Arlene's and I remember coming home on the G train at like 4 a.m, which even for me at that point in my life was insanely too late. It was like a very long night out of karaoke. And at Arlene's, it was at that point, it was really tough to get on stage, not just like emotionally, because it was kind of terrifying, because, you know, for people who never did live band karaoke, it's like it is a very different energy. You really know within 30 seconds if you made the right song choice. Like, you know, when Rob Kemp, who was the bassist, who would kind of talk to the, when he announced the name of the song you were doing, you knew right away whether you know whether this crowd was in the mood for Black Flag or Def Leppard. You would know, really, you get a good response. So I only went up a couple of times, but I loved going to that. That was a real scene. It was just, you know, everyone was beautiful and cool and funny. And I just thought this was like, I was like, this is New York. You moved to New York and there's people singing, I don't know, whatever Sex Pistols song for the 18th time. And it's some like beautiful girl who's your age. And you're like, I'm never going to talk to her, but I can watch her sing this song. And it was like, it was a really nice kind of communal scene too. Everyone was really friendly and there were a few jerks, but it felt like kind of everyone got along and, you know, a lot of people kind of found each other there.
So was that community aspect like part of what really drove you into karaoke at that time in your life?
I think for some of it, I mean, I certainly, there are people now who, and this was 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago. So it's funny now, sometimes I'll look at old photos and I'll be like, I can't remember this. Oh yeah, this was a person that we knew for like 8 months and we only kind of knew them through karaoke. And I don't know where they wound up. You know, we had, because we would pull in, my friends and I who all worked there, we all went together, we all worked in different industries. My friend Ava worked in fashion, I worked in magazines, my other friends worked in various kind of business jobs. So we would try to pull people in, and it was not always easy because people were like, well, I don't want to go sing karaoke. And we'd say, no, it's a private room. Like, it'll just be you and me and five other people. And it was often you and me and 20 other people, because we would stack as many people as we could in there. But even just like the people who worked there would come in and sing with us. You know, we wound up filming a lot of it and making a really terrible Manhattan public access show that was just like barely edited karaoke footage. At some point, people started buying like really cheap, crummy puppets, and they would bring, it was just like a weird, like if I looked at the photos now from those days, I would probably only be able to ID half the people in the room. You know, they're just people, and that's what being young in New York in your 20s is like. A lot of people sort of float in and out. But for me, it was certainly as someone who had, you know, I don't use the phrase social anxiety because I don't know if that's what I had, but I was just always kind of nervous in front of new people. And I never felt nervous doing this. I just felt like we were having a party. And looking back now, what's also really nice is that even though people were drinking a lot, and I'm sure occasionally people were doing other stuff, like no one was really, nothing really bad happened. You know, I mean, you think about it now, it's like so much bad stuff could happen that in the early aughts, people were drinking. And it's like, everyone was actually really kind of kind to one another, or considered at least. And no one, we didn't have a lot of jerks. There was no fights. There was no drama. It was just people who wanted to sing Night Ranger as, you know, as loud and as frequently as possible.
Now, earlier you mentioned, you know, not singing well and all of that. Did you find that you got better over time the more you did it?
I felt that I became very confident in, over time, I really got very good at picking out the right songs, like knowing a song that the room was going to go for. I don't know if my voice ever improved in any real notable way, but I could fake it. And I could, you know, I also had, at that point, I had very good lyrical recall, which I no longer have. It's like a weird thing that starts to go in middle age, which is, no one tells you you're going to start forgetting Public Enemy lyrics. It's going to be one of the things you're reaching for at 3 a.m. But I did have very good lyrical recall. So I did, you know, I was in my 20s and doing dumb stuff to impress people, but I always would thrill if I could like turn away from the monitor and just do an entire, you know, like, I think the sad thing is at that point, people, if you could just do the entire rap from, you know, On Our Own by Bobby Brown without looking to reference, there were people who were pretty impressed. And I played to those people, and I it was really like a genuine kind of fun thing to sort of feel like you won people in the room over, because it was a tough crowd. There were some really good singers. There were people with really insane, you know, it was New York City, so you get theater people in sometimes who could really sing, and that was intimidating and sometimes a little too much. But it was, you definitely wanted to impress everyone who was there, because it was New York. And you're like, if you're in New York, you are de facto cool. And I, in some way, even though I don't know you, you know, so you wanted to win the room over. So, but no one ever cared how you sang. I mean, if you got up and didn't sing after picking a song, that was a little whack. But otherwise, no one was judging. There was no American Idol voting you know, table afterward when we were doing this.
I feel like you and I are very karaoke kindred spirits. I never get by on hitting notes correctly, but
yeah.
I do remember the time that I was at a bar in Florida, and it was like a very like hyped up, amped up party crowd, a big mix of people. And I'm like, this is the one bar I can get away with doing Let Me Clear My Throat. And it froze on the screen and pixelated.
Oh my gosh.
And the guy's like, I can switch. I was like, no, I'll just keep going. It's fine. I know the words. I grew up with this. And then that was a night that I had drinks bought for me. So that was fun for me.
It's always a sign of a good performance. Yeah.
And I mean, you turned your love of karaoke into a great hustle, because you got paid to write about it and paid to do it for a while between your articles and your book.
Yeah.
Did having that kind of
quite the scam.
Did having that professional engagement with it, though, did that change anything in the way that you reacted to karaoke, performed karaoke, or the way you thought about it?
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that. I mean, I certainly, you know, when I, in the early aughts, when I, you know, I had one of the greatest assignments ever was after Lost in Translation came out, I pitched a story to GQ where I was working at the time. I was like, what if I just kind of went to Japan to try to find the ultimate karaoke bar? And they bankrolled this, which is still crazy to me, because the story never ran, because I wound up leaving that, I kind of quitting that job 5 weeks afterward. But me and two of my friends went out to, you know, we spent a week in Japan, maybe longer than a week, and we did a lot of karaoke, but we also got to go around Japan. But I do, you know, I wrote about it because I was genuinely curious about it, and that is one of the, you know, journalism is such a weird, tough, kind of terrible gig anymore. But one thing that I've always loved about it, and the only reason why I'm still really doing it, is because if you are interested in something, you can usually call up someone who's really an expert and find out. Like, you get, I always feel like it's like you're on the world's longest series of research projects. You're just kind of, and you're like, oh, why are these karaoke videos so goofy? Well, I'm going to call up everyone I can find who worked on them and has directed them and produced them and try to figure out what this industry was like. So that was the real joy of it. And I did. I mean, I got to go. I got to go on a karaoke cruise ship. Where was that? In Finland for Wired magazine. I covered the karaoke world championship in Bangkok. I did that as a chapter in my book. And, you know, I'd never gone anywhere growing up. I didn't go overseas until I was 25, 26 years old. I never thought I would travel. I mean, really, honestly, as a teenager, I barely went anywhere. And so karaoke, in this weird way, became a kind of entree to see the world and to meet other people who liked it. And that's really wonderful. And the fact that I got to expense karaoke for a couple of years of my life is truly shocking and probably not right. Looking back, I mean, it's insane that I got to do that.
Yeah, but it left some great stories.
Yeah.
With your personal experience of karaoke, Do you remember a time where you absolutely crashed and burned? And then conversely, the first time where you really felt like, wow, I killed this.
I do sort of feel it's tough because especially in those early days, I really used to have to drink quite a bit to get up and do it, which is a little bit of a shame, but I also, that's who I was at that point in my life. So I feel like some of those things I just can't really remember. And I can't tell you whether I'd be gauging it accurately or not. I certainly, you know, as I mentioned, that first time in Pennsylvania at that Penn State bar, I really felt a huge wave of energy and real excitement. You know, I have more of a vague memory of just like being in New York in the early aughts and being in one of those private rooms and just turning around and singing something ridiculous and realizing that all eyes are on me and these are all friends or people I just met, and just that feeling could be really overwhelming. I wish I had more. That's the thing about karaoke now. Like, I wish I had more specific memories. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of the way sometimes athletes can't remember stuff that happens in games until they watch the tape afterward. Cause you're just like, I did that. And I'm sure I crashed and burned like so many times. I definitely had some times with my one friend where, I mean, it was just no one wanted to hear whatever nonsense we were peddling. But, you know, I do remember now when we were in Japan, we were in one of these really tiny, they have really, really tiny bars that you can find on like the third or fourth floor of a building. And it was just us and it was a lot of workers who were just getting off, clearly like business guys, all men, business guys in suits. And I think we did like a Carpenter song. And I remember they were all really they were all very kind to us. And I think kind of pleased that we'd chosen something that they really wanted to hear. I'm sure they were used to, you know, people from America coming in and kind of barreling through. But that was a really nice moment when you're kind of in the place where karaoke came from and you feel like you're at least accepted in that kind of way. And, you know, you do feel sort of a kinship to the lineage there, I guess. But man, so much stuff is just lost like in my head. I mean, I'm sure I have damning evidence of some bad performances somewhere recorded, or I'm sure I have. I wish I could get like what I would love to get is like my cell phone from 2000 or 2001 and like what dig up whatever stupid text messages I have from the nights before. That would be insightful and terrifying.
So you're also a media guy. Like you have a podcast about film criticism. You have, you know, lots of articles about, you know, movies, music, TV, etc. Let me ask you this. What scene in like a TV show or a movie do you feels most right to what you know karaoke to be?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I'd have to really think about what is, you know, it's so weird. I do think there is something of, and this is probably the answer anyone would give. And it's so obvious that I hate to give an obvious answer, but it's also so obvious that I can't help it. But I do think Bill Murray singing More Than This in Lost in Translation and whatever the connection is he's feeling at that point with Scarlett Johansson. I mean, that is a weird thing that can happen. And I have watched people fall in love to karaoke. It's something that I certainly, people in my life, my wife and other people I dated before I met my wife, we had really nice moments like that where even in a crowded room, you're kind of singing to just one person sometimes. And I think I've also had that moment, that connection with really good friends of mine that I've sing with, where we'll be, you know, I have a couple friends that I know if I went to a big crowded karaoke room and sang one song, it would be for us, for the two of us, you know. I do think that movie would kind of really, that moment really captures it. Again, I wish it wasn't the most obvious karaoke pop culture moment, but it does feel like one of the most honest ones.
I have a question about a specific movie, just to see if I'm off base on this, because I wasn't doing karaoke at the time, but you obviously remember Duets.
Oh, sure, yeah. Miramax, 95. I worked in a video store, so I have a very stupid recall of when movies came out on VHS. But yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time.
Question I want to ask somebody who was doing karaoke in the 90s and the early 2000s is, did anybody ever actually call the karaoke book a menu?
I have heard it that way, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but certainly a couple of times, yeah. And I think maybe in Japan I had that a couple of times too.
Really?
So, you know, points to Bruce Paltrow for getting Duets, some of the details right in Duets. It's weird. I wonder if that movie has any cultural kind of legacy now. It's just not a movie I don't know if anyone really talks about anymore at all.
I force people to watch it just because there's not a lot of movies that are just about this thing that I love. So
yeah.
And all the other ones that I've seen are really, really bad.
It's top 10 Huey Lewis movies for sure.
While we were setting this up, you had mentioned you don't really get to do karaoke like you used to. When was the last time you were out and sang a song?
The last time I was out and sang a song has been a long time. I'm trying to think when that was. I went to a friend's house in the holidays two years ago, and we did it there. And I did it with my daughters, my really young daughters, a couple years ago before we moved from New York to Los Angeles. But, you know, I find that there are three reasons why people stop doing karaoke. One is that they have kids. Two is that they stop drinking. And three is that they become part of an international pandemic that makes karaoke seem. And in the last couple of years, 4 or 5 years, all three of those things have happened for me. And it's not, and also, like, honestly, New York was such an easy karaoke city. It's when I lived there, it's like you just get on the train or walk. There's, you know, a place like St. Mark's, at least back when I was going all the time, it's like you go to this place, or that, you know, it's like which place are you least bored of? Because you can always walk in and get a room. Here it's a little bit different. In LA, it's not quite, and there are really good karaoke places here. I've done it in the past, but it just doesn't feel quite as accessible. But they actually just opened a karaoke place relatively nearby. So now I am actually excited to go again and go with my whole family, but we just have to wait till my kids can get vaccinated, basically. It still doesn't feel quite safe for that.
No.
But it has been a long time and I missed it. But it's also a thing that I didn't grow out of it. I still hear a song go, oh, this would be fun at karaoke. But, you know, so many people that I used to do it with have just moved on. And it was, for me, so much of it was doing it with my friends. And now we get together and do other things. What I did go on, I did go on a very COVID safe trip with a bunch of friends this summer. And we actually had a karaoke machine, but we spent so much time yammering and talking that by 11 o'clock at night, it's like, we're just like, we haven't seen each other in a year and a half. Like, we have to keep BSing all night. So hopefully we'll get to that place again. I do know that I have a fairly substantial monumental birthday coming up not too far down the road. And I have a feeling karaoke will be a very big part of that celebration, but I'm going to do it before that happens.
Nice. Very nice. And, happy birthday well in advance, and I hope you get to sing at it.
Thank you.
Again, you know, thank you just for coming on and talking with us today.
Oh,
sure. I really appreciate it. The minute I saw your book was available, I bought it and I tore through it.
Thanks.
So this one's exciting for me personally. But now it's time for us to play our little game.
Okay.
Where I'm going to ask you 5 questions, and I just want the first answer that comes to your head. It's a quick fire game. I'm going to ask you to hit me with your best shot.
Cool.
Once we get through that, I'm going to give you the chance to fire away. Ask me any single question that you want, karaoke related or not. And I promise to be 100% truthful. And I'm sticking to that. I'm sticking to my guns there. I will tell the truth. I will not plead the fifth of vodka. So the first question, Brian, what is the best thing you've seen at karaoke?
Oh my gosh. I think when I took my two young daughters to karaoke and they sang, and I sang, I think it was a Taylor Swift song with my daughter. That was very, very fun because they'd never done it before and they took to it immediately. I have also, though, seen, like, there were some nights of that punk metal karaoke where it's just like someone gets up and does not. I do remember there was this one woman used to get up and sing Def Leppard's Photograph, and I kind of fell in love with her, kind of fell in love with her and thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Never struck up a conversation ever. I was way too terrified. But at that point in my life, and that kind of shows where my life has gone from 20 years ago till now. But those two things were certainly two of the best performances that I've ever seen. Also, I've seen my friend Ava do Informer by Snow in front of crowds that are not ready for Informer by Snow. And she knows that song all the way through. And she always slays that song. So that's three answers. But those are the first three that come to mind.
Fantastic. What's the worst thing you've seen at karaoke?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I know who was it, but I remember one night when someone back in the New York kind of village karaoke nights, I do remember one friend who would, I think, put on Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf and was just not ready for how long it is. And I remember that got like really tough because they did not want to give up on it. And I do think that was always a weird thing in those rooms. Sometimes people would just be like, oh yeah, Knock on Heaven's Door, that's a fun one. And you're like, it's not. It goes on for a long time. And it's weird. There are certain longer songs that just cannot, you can see the look of panic on someone's face. I mean, it's like Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. Yeah, you got, it's a, you know, it changes up a lot. You got a lot of stuff going on there. It kind of flies by. But yeah, when it's like the eighth time of singing, Let Me Sleep On It, the person just looks like they're going to pass out and they realize they made a terrible decision. I do remember, I think I know who did that. I do remember that being a pretty terrible night for that person.
It's very kind of you not to name them. Yeah. What is the one song you would love to do at karaoke that you've never been able to find?
Oh, there's a lot of those. I had a list at one point. I think I had an appendix in my book. Yeah. And then a couple of the songs are now, a lot of the songs are now available. There is definitely, I mean, I was very into, in the 90s, I was very, very, very into a lot of emo and indie, like really indie pop punk. And there's some of those songs which no one would recognize that I would love to do. I will say there is, since this is a Pennsylvania adjacent conversation, there was a pop punk band in Pennsylvania in the 90s called Weston.
Yeah.
Who had, yeah, Weston. I love Weston.
One of the first shows I went to was a Weston
really?
Show. Yeah.
Where was it?
Easton, PA? I think it was in Easton, PA. Yeah.
I'm sure they played 100 shows in Easton, PA. That's like the perfect Weston town. Weston and Easton. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But they have a lot of stuff. They have a song called Young Pennsylvania, which is one of my favorite goofy. It was like a B-side. And it's all about how Pennsylvania like is awesome and should beat up New Jersey. And it's such a goofy, catchy song. And weirdly, when the election that Saturday, when we found out that Biden won, it was Pennsylvania had turned, you know, was that first kind of break. That song was the first thing that came to mind, which is so weird. But I do love that song. And it's like, I would love to sing that song in Pennsylvania to at least three people who know what that song is. But it's, I would love that. There's a million Jawbreaker songs. There's like weird Fugazi deep cuts. There's a lot that I could, you know, I could probably do an entire 2-hour playlist of just songs that you can't do that I would love to do.
That's awesome. Let's say you're in a brand new place while traveling and you have only one chance to sing a song. What song do you pick to make your mark to a crowd that's never seen you before?
You know, I think that whenever we would have those karaoke parties and we had to get things going, we learned after a while that there was one song that everyone seemed to like and that tempo-wise seemed to work and that no matter the age was kind of recognizable. And that was, weirdly, Billy, Don't You Lose My Number by Phil Collins. I just think that because Genesis and Phil Collins are so internationally huge, that would probably, if you do Phil Collins, someone knows who you are. They know where you're going with that. Maybe I would do a different one or like, a different kind of 80s Genesis tune, but I do feel like those are, and also like Billy Don't Choose My Number is very much like, I don't even know what my range is, but it's relatively nearby.
Yeah, I don't think I could hit that one myself. If you could magically strike one song from every karaoke playlist forever, what song would you choose?
I mean, that Meatloaf song, certainly. I mean, I love Since You've Been Gone. I think Since You've Been Gone is one of the, hands down, one of the best, probably the top five songs the last 20 years. Like, I really honestly, I don't know if I need to hear it ever again, like in a karaoke room. Like, it just was so omnipresent for so long, but I wouldn't walk out and I would probably sing along too. It is sort of like, there's just a lot of classic rock songs that I don't ever need to hear. And like I said, the Meatloaf song is one of them. And that does get pulled on quite a bit. And there's probably a couple of, you know, there's also songs that people would put on ironically and think it's funny. Like, I definitely would see dudes being like, I'm going to sing Memories from Cats and it'll be funny. I'm like, just, that's not that funny. It's not that funny, dude. Like, so that kind, not necessarily that song, but that kind of like winking, ironic kind of bro-y show off thing. I'm
too cool. I'm too cool to be here, but I'm still here.
Yeah. I never dug that vibe. You know, it's not cool to me. I don't know.
Well, Brian, you did it. You haven't been out for karaoke in a while, but you,
oh wow,
nailed Hit Me With Your Best Shot. Great answers. Thank you. Now's your chance. Fire away. Any question, karaoke or otherwise?
Oh, let me see. Well, one thing I always ask people is, and this is a very hard question to answer, so if you want to punch it in a post, I will give you a series of pre-programmed responses, but do you have a favorite? I'm obsessed with incorrectly transcribed lyrics on karaoke. So okay. Do you have any that you remember? Because sometimes, like, I think they're much better now, but definitely in like the mid-aughts, there were a bunch of companies from England that were sending over like old 70s classic rock songs and not getting the lyrics right at all. Do you have any you remember from that, or is that something that you even pick up on?
The closest thing that I can say to that is a few episodes back, Adam and I had a challenge, and I'm still arguing with him whether I won it or not, because my thing is, like you, I've got a good sense of rhythm, if not a good sense of notes,
right?
And I've got a very good memory for song lyrics. And I am 99% certain that I got the section in It's the End of the World as We Know It correctly, mm-hmm. as per the Sound Choice version.
Okay.
But the lyrics that he had online were different. And I'm like, oh, wow. Maybe the lyrics I've been singing, because I just know it from the Sound Choice version, maybe I have it wrong because of that. And I'm not
that can happen.
Yeah. So but, I mean, that's the one that sticks out. The other thing that sticks out with that to me is I don't always notice the lyric differences, but when something doesn't scan right, where we all know the songs we're singing, I think, for the most part, but sometimes you don't know it as well as you think you do. And that scan being off, that's the thing that I find really off-putting. My worst performance ever was Mr. Jones by, I forget what the manufacturer was, but I mean, I got booed. It was pretty awful.
Oh no.
Fantastic. I mean, Adam was the one who started the booing, but I mean, everyone joined in. Great.
Yeah. My favorite the one that I always remember is there's Keeping the Faith by Billy Joel. I know this, and I think my friend and I would put this on just for this lyric, but there's a line where he says, "I heard about sex, but not enough." And the lyrics on the karaoke screen were, "I heard about 6 foot, not enough." And I was like, that seems more obscene. That's like the weirdest misheard. And I used to take pictures of them. I have photos somewhere of a bunch of misheard, but I'm always surprised when it's like for a genuinely big star and a big song. We're like, wait a minute, this is very easy to track down the right information for this. But they are my favorite. When they do occur, it's like a glitch in the matrix. It's very very exciting to see them.
I love that. That's a great question to ask people. You know, again, Brian, you know, thank you for being on. I was really looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, this is fun.
Let people know where they can find you, what you're working on now. If there's anything that you want to promote and share.
Oh, I'm not much of a promoter, but I just did a podcast for The Ringer and Spotify. It was a limited series podcast called Gene and Roger, which is about Siskel and Ebert, where I interviewed all their family members and colleagues and fans. And that was really, really fun to do. So that's on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, which I guess is how we all are supposed to say that. And then I do stuff for The Ringer fairly semi-regularly. I did a couple pieces this year, but I've mostly been doing school from, you know, I had my kids at home for the last year and a half. So now they're back in school. So I'm starting to put together projects for the fall, but I'm on Twitter, but I rarely go on Twitter anymore. I have to stay off for the most part. So, but yeah, the podcast is definitely the biggest thing. That's what I worked on for the last year. So, and that was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Yeah. Everybody please check that out. It's fantastic. Especially if you grew up with Siskel and Ebert. That's a fond memory for me. That was one of the shows that got me into thinking about media in in a critical sense, and might have even led to grad school and every other silly choice I've made in my life. Brian, thank you so much. You've been fantastic. Thank you.
This is wonderful.
And I hope we get to see you singing at a screen sometime soon. The 90s and the 2000s were a great time for music. They were a great time for karaoke. Unfortunately, they were not a great time for smartphones. So we didn't carry things in our pockets that had good audio and video quality. We weren't able to get anything of Brian singing for the episode, but I have not sang on my own podcast yet. So here is my version of Leonard Cohen's Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody's got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. I give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. It knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. And everybody knows that you live forever when you've done a line or two. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. Everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach of Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes.
We'd like to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. And hey, if you like what you heard, make sure you follow us on Twitter at sungpoorly.
Yeah.
Send us an email, sungpoorly@gmail.com.
Just do it.
And subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, or the podcast feed of your choice. You know, Apple Podcast.
Or all of them.
I'm going to throw this out here too. If you're listening to this episode, we talked a lot to Brian Raftery. Talked about his book, Don't Stop Believing. Send us an email at sungpoorly with whether you'd want a physical paper copy of the book.
Ooh.
Or you'd want a Kindle copy of the book. And we're going to choose one winner and have that be on the next week's show. We'll let you know who won. So yeah, send us an email, sungpoorly@gmail.com. Specify the way that you want it. Don't give us your mailing address or anything. I don't want that. This is not like for that. I'll only need that if you win and you want a physical copy. I mean, I'm assuming that the email you send it to us from is going to be where we send a Kindle version anyway. So
that's amazing. How can I get involved then? Can I win the book?
No, you got to buy your own.
Well, I guess since I have to buy my own, I might as well do something else with my life for the time being. And thank a friend of the show, Ben Dumb, for the theme song Gasoline. Make sure you check out his latest project, The Ben Dumb 3, on Spotify or other music platforms. And Ben Dumb, your Ben Dumb thought of the week is karaoke in the morning?
That's a good thought.
think about it less than what you think, Ben Dumb. He hasn't responded to any of these, by the way. I'm waiting for the day that Ben Dumb actually gives us his thoughts on these.
And In all fairness, sometimes I text Ben and I don't get a response back for a week and a half. He's a very busy man.
He's a busy man, but God damn it, I wish he would. And I want to know what he thinks about karaoke in the morning.
And make sure to tune in 2 weeks from now when we talk to a Friday night karaoke member who won a spot on our show and has been involved with karaoke for 25 years as both a singer and a host. That's it. That's all. There is no more. So until next time, I'm Ed Kennard.
And I'm Adam Wainwright.
And remember that singing off key is still technically singing.
We were right around a half an hour, so that's right.
Yeah, I'll cut some of it out. I'll make myself look better in the challenge.